Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. This is our very special 2007 edition. What are some like really 2007 things? Just to put people in the right mind.
There will
Avatar.
Be blood. You drink my I drink your milkshake. I
probably
drink it
Avatar.
Up. I drink like, your Avatar.
You say any year before 2011, I'll be like, yeah, I think that was the year Avatar came out.
Avatar and There Will Be Blood are really just both about the fight over natural resources, if you think about it.
That's yeah, true.
And like, the thing they have in common is that no one's actually watched them since 2007.
And I don't know, other than beating a man to death in a bowling alley, I don't know that I remember any plot points from either.
He is a terrible father.
Right, that's Avatar, yep.
Daniel Day-Lewis. Right. When Daniel Day-Lewis is riding the purple dragon and they're connected from his hair into right. the dragon's brain, they're trying to stop the bad guy from Jurassic Park 4
yep.
or whatever from eating the magic space rocks.
Mm-hmm,
he's
mm-hmm.
a terrible father to his boy who I think can't speak.
Hey, why can't we get Daniel Day-Lewis to play the Predator? Because I really want to see him use his extreme method approach.
He has to become invisible?
Yeah, he has to like skulk around LA, only speaking in the Predator's roar and like killing indiscriminate. Well, discriminately. The Predator knows what he's doing. He's not a xenomorph.
That's right. Jeez. He's not just a mindless. He's not a mindless killing machine.
There are choices being made. Is one of you like rubbing paper in front of your microphone?
Well, no. I'm not, but you never know.
It's just I want everybody, you know, this podcast will never sound good. I will try. And I'm hoping that maybe in some Sisyphean way, this is how I'll live forever. That like God has decided, Ryan, you can't come home until you figure out how to make the Fullcast not sound like shit. I'm like, okay, God. And 300 years later, there will be me saying, well, Jason's recording from inside his space lawn. How did that happen?
Buddy, we just love you too much to let you go.
Thank you. I love you guys too. We're here to talk about 10 years ago.
Throw some D's on it.
You know what's really...
That was the year of Rich Boy.
Rich yeah. Boy, okay. Yeah, you man, the last track on that album.
If you really want to be terrified, think about how good we all looked in 2007.
Oh, man. Really good one compared to... yeah, same. No, Jason's the same. He's immortal.
I haven't aged since I hit, like, 14. It's... I mean, for a while it made me mad, but now it makes me happy.
Do you think it's going to catch, like, all catch up at once, or?
Oh, yeah, it's going to hit me hard. The day I turn 40, like, pow.
Yeah, he's just going to be an old guy from Georgia.
Just there goes my back.
He's going to look like Hank Hill's dad.
Your eyes will get instantly beady. You'll have some war record that you didn't actually earn.
I don't even know what Spencer was doing in 2007.
That's a really good question. Neither do I. I was working for Sporting News and doing part-time stuff. And
Those aren't real words.
No. I did end up, though, in a couple of places at 2007, most notably the LSU-Florida game in Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. The greatest game I've ever seen. You might say the pass is crap, and I do frequently, but I would remind you of several things about 2007. Maybe the best year in college football history for plot. Best script by far. All right. And Throw Some D's by Rich Boy came out. That's it. Those are my two things in 2007. Then I go, well, those were guaranteed quality. That's it. And that's enough. That's enough for me to be proven wrong on my the past is crap, don't remember anything. There are things we should remember about 2007. Oh, we might even have a list of them.
We do. So, we're going to play a little game here. I have prepared a list of what I would say are the 13 stupidest facts about 2007 college football season. And as always on this program, and as anything during anything affiliated with this program, when we say stupid, we say so lovingly. I'm gonna run through these facts, and Spencer and Ryan are going to give each one a 1 to 10 score on how stupid this fact is, and then at the end we'll rank them and we will decide what are the 10 dumbest facts from the greatest season in the history of America's stupidest sport.
Can I ask a clarifying question, if that's okay?
Well, that doesn't really fit the theme, but yes.
Do you want us to judge how stupid these are from the vantage point of today, 2017, or then 2007?
I think looking back is the way to do it.
Okay.
Absolute value. Yeah. So okay. I think as judged from the most complete historical perspective you have, which is the one you're sitting on right now.
Great. Because there are at least a few where the history is what really makes it.
Right. I like that. Great. Perfect.
So, and this is a part of at SBNation.com and at various team sites throughout the SB Nation network. We have put together what we believe is the greatest story anyone could possibly tell about the greatest season in the history of the sport. So let's start with thing number one on the list. Jim Harbaugh's Stanford beat Pete Carroll's USC as a 40-point underdog. How dumb was this?
So at first it's really tempting to say not that dumb because, you know, Jim Harbaugh's Stanford turned into a very good program. This was his first year in Palo Alto, I believe. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, USC definitely had that, like, sort of trickle down after the glory years where it's like, okay, this doesn't seem ludicrous. But then you remember who the quarterback was for Stanford.
Tavita Pritchard?
Yeah, it would be. Do you know what his passing line was on the day? 11 for 30 for less than 150 yards, one touchdown, and a pick.
Y'all, and by the way, on that last drive, I'm pretty sure they're facing like 4th and 18, and they convert it.
No Stanford player rushed for more than 32 yards. This was Stanford finished the day with 235 yards. USC had 459.
Yeah. By the way, that team we're clowning on them now. Ended up 10-2.
Which team are we clowning on?
USC for losing.
Okay, because right. I was gonna say that's what makes it really dumb. Is it's not like this Stanford team was some sort of secret juggernaut that we just didn't know how good Jim Harbaugh was at that point, and they put it all together, and what a miracle season! Can you name the other three teams that Stanford beat that year?
I can't actually.
Please,
because I have looked this up. Okay, before San Jose State. They beat Arizona because everyone beats Arizona, right? They beat USC, and the last one is Cal. They beat Cal.
They beat Cal in the big – yeah.
Cal, which briefly ranked number two.
Correct. So it's just a very weird collections of wins for a 4-8 team to say, yeah, you know, we were pretty bad all year. We lost to Washington by 18 and – but good news, we beat number two USC on the road. So I'm going to say that this, what do you want, like a scale here?
Yeah, one to ten.
One to ten, with one not being surprising at all and ten being like, oh my God.
Yeah, to me, this is an eight. This is still very dumb. Very, very dumb.
No, I'm gonna one up you here. This is a full 10 out of 10. I think this is the thing that in 2007 makes the absolute... No. It's a 9 out of 10. I just remembered something that makes even less sense. So 9 out of 10, 40-point underdog, a 4-8 Stanford team knocking them off. Yeah. Oh, one more fact about that game. The guy who caught the pass that converted the 4th and long that led to the successful fade into the end zone to beat USC. Can you name that wide receiver from the 2007 Stanford class? He no longer plays wide receiver.
Yeah, so it was Richard Sherman.
Richard Sherman, playing wide receiver, caught that 4th and long.
When you have the time, go look at the box score for this game and go to the USC side and look at how many USC players you're like, I remember him. It is not, it is like very small list, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I don't remember a goddamn single one of these. Like, Joe McKnight, yes, we remember Joe McKnight, rest in peace. These guys just like, yep, mm-hmm, sure, yeah, that sounds like a name.
And also, starting quarterback John David Booty was hurt for at least part of this game. We went back and looked and figured out that USC was one of the teams that this season there were several teams that fit this bill that was undefeated with a healthy quarterback.
That's unfortunate. Yeah, this game was very dumb. Very, 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 very dumb.
Very dumb. And Vegas people say it stands to this day as the biggest point spread upset in history. And there's still debate as to whether it's even the biggest upset of this year. Moving along.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Number two, USF ranked number two during its 11th year as a football program. In the initial BCS rankings.
So it's not that dumb if you look at who they beat. They went on the road and beat Auburn, ranked 17th at the time, in week two. In week four, they beat West Virginia, their Big East mate at the time. Yep. All that sounds right. They beat them at home. They were, the Mountaineers were number five. So, like, that's two quality wins. In between there, you also had a win over UNC. Not a good UNC team, but a ACC win all the same. So, like, from the pure perspective of did it make sense at the time? Sure, somebody had to be number two. Why not USF? Even from the perspective of, like, what happened by the end of the year, I don't know. They didn't... I don't know how dumb it is. I feel like it's maybe in like a 5-6 range.
Yeah, I was gonna go 4 out of 10. Things got pretty crazy. They had a clean record at the time. Yeah, 4 out of 10. This isn't from this perspective, not the weirdest thing that happened.
I mean, it's not even the weirdest thing about USF season. I would argue the weirdest part is that they played Oregon in the Sun Bowl, and we have a piece about that that Richard Johnson wrote up. They got destroyed by Oregon. They lost by 35 points. I'm pretty sure they were losing by 3 touchdowns at the end of the first quarter. But USF was favored to win that game. We lived in a world where the same Vegas odds makers that said Stanford 40-point underdogs said South Florida, you should beat Oregon.
One of my favorite stats about this year, there's a bunch of them, is that Oregon, as a ranked team, lost 3 different games to unranked teams. Oregon had an excuse. Best player, Dennis Dixon, quarterback, got hurt. USF also lost 3 ranked games to unranked teams. In the Sun Bowl, USF was ranked, Oregon was ranked, unranked Oregon won. See if you can figure that puzzle out at all, because I can't. So, Ryan, you were 5 or 6 for this?
Yeah, I'll give it a 5. I feel like that's a 5.
Okay. Wow, that's very low in my opinion. But I'm only the presenting.
I'm hanging it as a 4.
That's okay. Well, I'll trust you, Florida experts on USF. Number 3. The Heisman Trophy winner went on to set the NFL playoff record for yards per completion despite being an H-back, inspire the 2 weirdest things John Boyce ever published, and hit more home runs than Michael Jordan.
Matt Ryan did all that, huh?
Matt Grothy.
It's amazing. John has always been a big fan of Darren McFadden, always been fascinated by him. Chase Daniel really inspires John.
Man, it's so. Which part of that do you want us like the whole
all of it? All of it. That was the Heisman. 10 years later, wait, did this guy even play football? Wait.
God. Yeah, I'm gonna put everything that's happened to Tim Tebow post 2008 as it's an 8. Can I give it an 8? I mean, it's pretty weird.
I mean, was this the same time that all the like Wildcat shit was going on?
So
there was definitely some school of thought that was like, well, you know, Rex Ryan's going to figure out how to use this guy on offense. some bullshit like that.
An NFL guy will figure out something innovative.
Sure. Oh, yeah. That was a big, big thing. We actually, we did a post on the Wildcat as well. Alex Kirshner did that one about how, you know, you had at Arkansas, you had Darren McFadden, Felix Jones, Peyton Hillis. You had Tebow at Florida, not technically Wildcat, but, you know, to a defense, it looks about the same. You also had, the West Virginia, the zone read. Again, to a defense, it looks about the same. And then you have in the NFL, it's all trickling up. Arkansas's offensive coordinator becomes the Dolphins quarterbacks coach, and they draft Pat White. It doesn't work, and that's sort of the end of the Wildcat, but helped lead to the run-pass option phase.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Tebow saga. What did you give it, Spencer?
I give it an 8. It's weird.
So I only want to give it a 7 for this reason. I want to give it room because it can get weirder, and I feel confident that it very well may. Like, if you tell me, next Summer Olympics, Tim Tebow's, silver medal, discus. I'm like, sure, why not, you know?
He's got the throwing motion. I've seen some of those Jets gifts. And hey, man, listen, in recent Heisman Trophy winner news, he ain't the weirdest, I'll tell you that.
Fair.
Number 4, LSU lost 2 completely off-the-rails bananas games and not only made the national title, actually won it.
Oh, God.
May I remind you, Kentucky and Arkansas.
Both in triple overtime, correct?
Mm-hmm. One of those
regulation.
One of those at home.
So the weird thing about LSU, one of the weird things about LSU this season is that when they were number 2, in a year where being number 2 was like the worst thing you could be, they were fine. Like, they cruised against the unranked teams, they stomped Virginia Tech, they beat South Carolina by double digits. Like, number 2 was not an issue for them. When they were number 1, sometimes they won, and sometimes they didn't. So, like, in a weird way, they needed to be number 2 going into the national championship game, because number 1 was really where they had problems. Those expectations, they were much better being in like lower level math and being all, oh yeah, you know, this is easy, A plus. How weird was it? God.
9.
Yeah,
it is a full on 9. Go back and try to find other undisputed non Billingsley poll national title holders with 2 losses. Without resorting to skullduggery or intellectual dishonesty, it's very hard
to find. I'll tell you, the last in the AP poll was 1960 Minnesota.
Yeah, and that's like not even football.
Yeah, that's, like, I mean, that's
whatever,
that's
whatever that was.
That's a wildly different era.
Yeah, it feels like it would be incredibly hard now for the number 1 team in the country to lose to an unranked team at home in their 12th game and still make the playoff. Like, it could happen, but definitely not if you already had another loss. So, like, the fact that they even got to play for a national championship and then win it, like, fairly easily.
And also, I mean, I think the playoff, that sort of illustrates how weird it is. Because, like, Penn State almost made the playoff as a 2-loss team last year. But that means ranking number 4, not number 2. There's a huge difference.
And that was with surging at the end of the season, not stumbling.
Not shambling in.
I had to go through these, by the way, remind you that it wasn't quite the case with LSU. Because remember that in South Carolina, in a really mean South Carolina-LSU game, they break the game open with a fake field goal. Right? Then the Florida game is a comeback, some sort of gigantic swamp opera. It's just drama from one end to another. They have a shootout with Alabama. The week before that, they played Auburn. And do you remember what LSU did?
Yeah, yeah. This was the craziest call of Les Miles' entire career, and that's saying a lot.
Yep, yep. With 1 second left on the clock, they run a play in field goal range. Easy field goal range. What is it? Is it a field goal? No. No. It's a faded Demetrius Byrd where the clock could have run out and they would have gone to overtime instead of securing a safe win.
even in the SEC championship game, Tennessee is leading that game by a point in the fourth quarter.
Final score is like 21-14, right?
21-14, and you know the how LSU scores its last touchdown?
Pick six.
Eric Ainge throws a pick six.
Eric Ainge threw the winning LSU TD in that game. And Ryan Perilou, their backup, later possibly questioned for being a person tangential and associated with an investigation into a riverboat counterfeiting scheme. I've never made a joke. Never, not made one.
I like that. That suggests that he was counterfeiting the boats themselves.
can you?
No, it's made out of paper mache. Damn you, Perilou!
Oh, he's 3D printing these boats.
Catch me floating.
So yeah, nine is maybe too low, but I'll go with nine.
Okay. Next, number five. Two-parter, they go hand in hand, okay? Ron Zook beat the number one team in the country, and there were no consequences for the team that suffered that upset.
None. Like the most Ron Zook moment ever, that Illinois would defeat the Ohio State Buckeyes behind the legs of Juice Williams, and that ultimately it would be futile and amount to absolutely nothing.
Ron Zook Ron Zook blew up the Death Star, but 5 minutes after the Death Star blew up the Rebels.
No, he's like ran out of gas, right? Like,
yeah, we made it!
it's like if they put Star Wars 4 and 7, smash them into a supercut, and like, right, you blew up the Death Star. Dummy, that was the wrong 4.
God damn it.
They have another. It's larger. It's the one you were supposed to blow up. No, this was Ohio State. I believe they went from like 1 to 5 to 1 in like 3 weeks.
Just turned it around, man.
No, it's worse than that. They went from 1 to 7 to 1. Good God.
Remember, that's how buoyant Ohio State is in the polls. They can do that. I would also suggest, by the way, my score on this for how surprising or weird this is, being one of the internet's foremost experts on Ron Zook, I give it a 2. Nope. Nothing about this surprises me. Because remember, this kind of thing's happened before. LSU, I believe it was 2003, Nick Saban's title year at LSU. Oh, you remember their only loss that year? It was to Florida. At home. In Baton Rouge.
Go Zucker.
Bobby Bowden's dedication.
The day they were, the day they were christening the field, which was also Ron Zook's last game as a Florida coach, I believe.
Yeah. So who was the most dangerous man in the world that day? Answer: Ronathan Zook.
Yeah, I'll defer to Spencer here because he has the most feelings on the subject.
I'm gonna take it down 1. I'm gonna give that a 1. The least surprising thing I've heard so far.
All right. This one. Oh, boy. This is the one that I think this is the one when you mention 2007 to just average fan. This is the one they yell at you. Kansas versus Missouri was circled on the calendar like it was goddamn Ohio State, Michigan, or the Iron Bowl or something. It was very important. Everyone watched it. And I can't say anymore.
So,
well, that was important to begin with, puts this easily at a 5 to start.
Right, right. That Kansas was playing Missouri, in retrospect, bumps it up to, I'll say, 6.5.
I'll agree. That this becomes, by the way, a physical game that is relatively tight until the fourth quarter. Right? Because remember, KU's down, and KU storms back! Looks like Todd Reason cuts it to 31-21. And it's not happening.
Yeah, KU had a chance until the very end. Bill Connolly did a nice story on this with Reason and Chase Daniel in our package. I think Reason says, you know, basically, we just ran out of time. It's just one of those games.
Yeah, I will take that. I'll put this at a solid 7.
Yeah, it's diminished slightly because Mizzou wins this game and then turns around and just farts it away. Again, just looks terrible against Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game. So it loses a little long-term meaning from that because we can't really look at it and say, a spot in the national championship was on the but seven sounds good.
Okay. I think that's pretty fair in retrospect.
Also, it needed to happen this way because otherwise we wouldn't have a picture of Mark Mangino next to the Orange Bowl mascot.
Yes, Dan Le Batard would not have a Twitter avi if not for this game. next! Oh, man. Hurts just to look at it. West Virginia blew a title shot.
10.
While a 29-point favorite against, and this is our quote from West Virginia fullback hero Owen Schmidt, the shittiest fucking team in the fucking world in the... In the last fucking game of the season, that's a quote. Alex did a nice post on the West Virginia Pitt rivalry and how it all just culminated in the deepest scar I know of.
No, from it's any result 10, ever. 12. What? Because here's this, like, that West Virginia team was super fun to watch, but flawed. Not like without its foibles. That Pitt team was garbage.
Let me give you who they lost to. Are you ready? Walk down this primrose path.
No, don't just
football flatulence with me.
You got to put some scores in here too, because these were not just losses. They lost to Virginia by 30.
They lost to Connecticut by 20. Connecticut didn't even like scoring points, and they lost to UConn by 20. They lost in double OT to Navy.
On a Wednesday, which is just perfect.
Wednesday. They lost they lost to Louisville. They lost to Rutgers. Remember, Rutgers was good. Remember.
Not a good Louisville. This is Cragthorpe.
I'm sorry. They lost to Louisville. That was 24-17.
They lost to Michigan State, early Michigan State, which was a bowl team, but not like a great team or anything like that.
Yeah, and their victories are crap. Like, they beat a deplorable Syracuse team 20-17.
They have one good victory coming into this game, and that's they beat Cincinnati, that Brian Kelly team. Hey, look at that. Look who popped up here ever so briefly. That team did finish 17th, so that was a good win. But other than that, I mean, it's also how this happened. Like, West Virginia, you lost 13-9 to a team that a week earlier had given up 48 points to South Florida. How can South Florida be 39 points better than you?
I don't know. At least if it were an entertaining game, maybe somebody would have had over 300 yards offense. Nope.
It was like watching sledgehammers fuck other sledgehammers.
Did either team have over 100 yards passing? No. Did either team have 20 first downs? No, West Virginia only had 12. Did we get to see the electric presence of Pat White the entire game? No, because he got hurt. Because that's what happens in shitty games where fate just decides to drag you over the thumbtacks. That's what happens.
My other favorite detail from our story on this is in our interview with Dave Onstat. He says that in practice before this game, he looked over and saw Paul Rhodes' defense. Paul Rhodes was the defensive coordinator. He looked over and saw Paul Rhodes still running the boys through tackling drills. And this was like, you know, 35 minutes into practice or whatever. Like, they should be on to other stuff. And he said, you know, coach, what are you doing? Shouldn't we be? No. We got to work on tackling if we're going to beat West Virginia. So, like, how this happened was Paul Rhodes got in his head that all they were going to do all the week, their entire prep was tackle. And it worked. Somehow it worked. Somehow just locking on like a pit bull onto one simple concept worked.
It is without question the most, if you think like of the almost of the teams that you're like, you know, Georgia, 5 yards away. Oh, this other team. Oh, if only they'd, Virginia Tech came closest. If only they'd held on against Boston College. This is by far the most painful almost in college, in like modern college football history, I would argue.
Number two lost. At that point, number two had lost six times that season.
Five times
on ranked teams, right?
Five times on ranked teams.
Yeah. This is from the AP recap. December 2nd, 2007. Rich Rodriguez's quote, after not being able to talk for several minutes when the press met with him, was, "It was just a nightmare. The whole thing was a nightmare."
This is program defining in so many ways, because Rich Rod, immediately after this, is no longer West Virginia's coach, right? He takes the Michigan job. Mm-hmm. West Virginia, who everybody's like, ah, really fucked that one up. They beat Oklahoma so badly in the Fiesta Bowl that they decide to give Bill Stewart the full-time job. It's still in the luxury suites. They don't even wait for the game to be over. They draft that fucking paperwork up, basically. It defines, like, where West Virginia will go and who they will be almost up to today. It's fucking wild.
And even more, Matt Brown did a nice story on this. He has a book out now called What If, about college football alternate history. He did a couple posts in our package. One of them is, what if West Virginia had won this game? And it gets into, you know, hey, Terrell Pryor, he was favoring West Virginia when Rich Rod was there. Maybe now Terrell Pryor in Rich Rod's offense against Big East opponents. Like, imagine how terrifying that would be.
If West Virginia keeps LSU out of the national championship game, when does Les Miles get fired? Because we saw how far he was able to go on one national title. Without that, Jesus, we're like 3 years into, I don't even know at this point. Hugh Freeze probably takes the LSU job instead.
is Les just fired after the 2011 rematch?
Maybe, probably.
Yeah, my theory, by the way, is that Hugh Freeze cannot exist outside of the old Miss Petri dish. So I'll just shoot that literally, like, he cannot coach football outside of Ole Miss. Like, he just wouldn't know how the numbers worked. He'd be like, we're putting on second down. You've got four downs. Oh,
well, I guess we're going to find out if that's true or not.
Spoiler alert.
Will we?
The other content item we have here, Spencer and I recorded on NCAA 08. We went back and tried to write this wrong. We went back and competed fairly with the rosters in the game to see if West Virginia can get it right this time around. And we're going to figure out a way to present that. We haven't yet because the audio didn't work.
I'm sorry. What's that?
Can you imagine that? We couldn't figure out audio without Ryan around. But we'll figure out a way to get that to people. I think it has a happy ending. We'll say that.
It does. It does. No matter what your allegiance is going into this, we come out with something for everyone.
And as the internet's foremost Pitt Homer podcast, I mean, I think we can say let's let the ears have this one. Next, there it is. Number five, Michigan. Lost at home to an FCS team in the Big Ten Network's debut.
This was like a very well-heralded Michigan team, too, because this was the team that, if you remember, at the end of the season prior, they lose a very good, very close game to Ohio State to end the season. Once UCLA beats USC, I think, to knock them out of the championship slot. There is a sustained and reasonably justified outcry that the national championship should not be Florida-Ohio State. It should be a rematch of this game. So this team definitely came in charged up, hungry, other cliches, et cetera, and to lose to App State, I mean, it's really just so magical that it was the very first game to air on the Big Ten Network. That's going to bump it all the way up to a 9 for me.
Yeah, this is actually what I was thinking of when I said that it wasn't a full 10, right, for Stanford to beat them. App State is bigger. It is the bigger upset. It is the more shocking upset. It's a full 10 out of 10.
Now, the thing here, I said an FCS team, and, you know, I think most listeners, if you listen to this garbage, you probably like this sport enough to know that App State at the time was not at all an average FCS team. They were in the middle of a three-peat dynasty at that level, but still,
they were the equivalent of like a North Dakota State today, right?
Yeah, that's a very fair comparison.
But yeah, no, they were dynastic.
Yeah, and North Dakota
State beating Iowa. That's funny, but it happens every year, an Iowa right. level team. North Dakota State winning at Ohio State in 2017, say? That is the level of thing we're talking about here.
Right, right. It should be, we should make clear that some of us on this podcast have seen our team lose to an FCS team. We know about it. Here's the thing. Our team was shit. And it deserved to lose, and it was bad. And they didn't even need to complete a goddamn pass.
Also, your team lost to this Michigan team that lost to Appalachian State.
Oh, yeah. Nobody gives a fuck about that.
In the annual Michigan-Florida bowl game. That's fine. The other thing that's cool about this game is sort of the way it was, like, it just put the underdog tactics of college football just right at the forefront. Like, you can be Michigan, you can have NFL linemen, you know, you can do all the pro style stuff, you can hit the basics and have a big defensive line and all that stuff, but hey, guess what? They got some fast guys. The game is now even.
What I really like about this is, you know, people every year people say preseason polls are bullshit, right? And we're like, yeah, they are, but you click them, so we make them. And they do usually have like a level of inertia where you can be a highly ranked team and look like shit in week one. You can lose and look bad in week one, and you're probably still going to be ranked. Michigan dropped from 5 to out of the polls after this game.
Just swept right out. Get that out of here. Get that out of my sight. And
it
then
took them, yeah, they had to crawl back in. And they had, listen, this team had some good games and some decent wins. But, like, there is, I don't know that you can find a faster pull drop in the history of the damn thing.
Yeah.
Michigan went from 5 to unranked in 1 week, climbed back to 13, left the polls entirely again, and finished number 18.
On the in the first game on the Big Ten Network. I mean, it was for 06-07. Like, people forget that Michigan team comes back and just smokes and outsprints Florida in a bowl game. 06-07 was where the like Big Ten deficit theory really started, and this is a very big nail in that coffin for them.
Number 9, not in order of rankings yet, but oh no, this is the sad one. The Heisman favorite Dennis Dixon destroyed his knee. Destroyed it again the next week, and number 2 Oregon just kind of evaporated, just disappeared.
Yeah, Dennis Dixon should have won the Heisman. Like,
what am I supposed to, like, I don't want to attach a number to this.
Yeah. Well, remember, we're going dumbest. This is, it's fair to say, this was dumb.
This is really dumb. This is like an 8 out of, this is an 8. If I'm just going how dumb, because I got to give like random luck a couple of points. So 8 out of 10, absolute. He played against Arizona with a tear in his ACL already. Maybe a full tear. Nobody's real sure. He went out there and played brilliantly until it gave out. It was agonizing to watch. Ah, hate it.
I think he should have won the Heisman anyway. Like, I think Tim Tebow, listen, great player for Florida. Not like undeserving, but the sort of difference between Oregon with healthy Dennis Dixon, even Oregon with playable Dennis Dixon, and after that, like, I don't know. I just sort of feel like if they should have just given him the damn thing.
8 out of 10.
8. So dumb. So dumb.
It's very dumb. Next. 10 times in 9 weeks, a team ranked number 1 or number 2 lost, and then number 2 beat number 1.
It's less dumb when you consider who the number 2s were, I think, because it did create this sort of weird domino system where it was like, it's sort of like a depth chart where you're like, ah, shit, linebacker, can you play quarterback? Cool. Ah, you're bad at it too and you got hurt? Fuck. So it's less dumb from that regard. It is very dumb in the sense that, as Spencer already mentioned, number 2 lost to an unranked team so many times. And much like that Stanford team we talked about earlier, most of these teams were not good. They were not like secretly, oh, look out, 9 win seat. No, these are teams that didn't make bowls or barely made bowls, or in Florida State's case, like, the season didn't even fucking count, and they lost to Kentucky in a bowl game. Like, it was a lot of nonsense. But you kind of became immune to it at a point. And I don't know what point that was. I will give this a 7 in terms of dumb. I'm going to give it a 5 because it stopped being dumb and it started being funny. It's that rule of 3. If you repeat it enough times, it becomes funny again.
Yeah, I'll give it a 4 because it involves humans and polling, which it's going to be like there's a forgivable amount of dumb there because you have very flawed voters making decisions here. So 4 out of 10.
The only team that was ranked number 2 that year and didn't lose as the number 2 at all was LSU.
That's next.
That's like a 9 out of 10 by itself. Yeah.
Nick Saban's Alabama lost to the team that currently has the country's 170th biggest athletic department financially.
2. Not dumb at all. Great. Best. Wonderful.
Very good. 5 stars. Yeah.
So like, good. So it? Good.
Loved it.
Can I give this so a good. 0?
Yeah.
Watch again.
Yeah. Like, honestly, if I were a ULM booster, I would keep paying for that billboard to stay up.
Yeah, they've played ULM since and got murdered. Doesn't matter.
Dude, who cares? Who cares? Keep that billboard up. Bronze the billboard. Put it happened on campus.
Once. Happened once, happened forever.
Have
you
it,
can't,
like,
you literally can project. Never undo it. You can't undo it, okay? You'll never undo it. It always happened.
Make the billboard like a state historic site or something.
Like, I believe everything Nick Saban and Alabama have done since then has been in a very, like, bad Terminator sequel movie attempt to be like, we have to go back and change it. And it's like, you'll never change it. It always, Judgment Day always happens. Skynet always wins. Kaka!
So, like, 2012, Saban, Bama wins the title. He's huffing and puffing about missing on recruiting time. He starts to feel this little, this little, like, maybe I should just enjoy an extra little dip. Maybe I should go sit by the lake for a weekend. I've earned it. I've won 2 titles. And he thinks about ULM. And he breaks out that phone. He's calling, like, 8 recruits at the same time. It's on.
Nick, I'll see you someday, right? Honey, I've got to win. You're in a war. We don't know.
I lost to ULM, goddammit.
Louisiana Monroe killed my family. We're still alive. You're dead. Not dumb. Lord. Wonderful. Perfect. I love it.
Okay, here's the long one. Alabama, Florida State, Kansas State, Louisville, Miami, Nebraska, Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, Ole Miss, Stanford, Texas A&M, UCLA, and Washington all lost 6 or more games each. Whew. And the following teams won 8 or more games each. Air Force, Arizona State, Arkansas, Boston College, Central Michigan, Cincinnati, Florida Atlantic, Fresno State, Hawaii, Illinois, Kansas, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Missouri, New Mexico, Rutgers, Texas Tech, Tulsa, UCF, UConn, USF, Virginia, Wake Forest, West Virginia, and Tennessee.
Damn. Okay, so I'm going to sidetrack slightly. I went through the 2007 standings. I tried to find who had the most normal year in 2007 for who they are as a program, and I think I have the answer. I think it's South Carolina. And I'm going to walk you through it, okay? They start out the year, they beat Louisiana Lafayette. Then they beat a highly ranked Georgia team 16-12 in an ugly game that makes Georgia fans miserable. That already sounds like South Carolina.
Yeah, it's pretty normal.
They beat South Carolina State. Now they're up to number 12 in the polls. What do? Immediately lose to LSU on the road. They beat Mississippi State, Kentucky, who's number 8 at the time. That's weird, but we'll move on from it. And North Carolina, they crawl back up to number 6. South Carolina's doing things. What do? They lose to Vanderbilt, an unranked team. They lose to Tennessee, an unranked team. They lose to Arkansas, an unranked team. They get crushed by Florida, who is ranked, and then they end the year losing to Clemson. South Carolina finishes the year 6-6, a roller coaster that, like all of them, ends the exact same place that it started. I maintain that the Gamecocks had the most typical year of any program in 2007. Everything else Jason said, I'm going to give it an 8.
No, I'll give it a 7.
Hawaii!
Nah.
What?
In context, man.
Like, just Virginia! Just look at this.
Ah,
name a 2007 Virginia player.
A 2007 Virginia player. You know that I have no idea off the top of my head because I repeated it back to you.
Actually, let me try. Patrick Kearney. Let me Google that. See if that... I'm off by an entire decade.
Blonde Barber, Rondé's blonde son.
Is DeBrickishaw Ferguson on that team?
I feel like that's a little before his time. He just missed it. That's a good guess.
That's a good guess. Dang it. Because, yeah, it was 2006.
Shit. This is hard. I don't think I'm going to be any help here.
No, I give up. In fact, I suggest
Wait. Is there a Long on this team?
Usually is. Yes! Chris Long! Long is the answer.
There you go.
Nice job.
We did it! We named one player from a team that won 9 games and finished 6-2 in the fucking Coastal. Oh, God.
And was at one point ranked number 16. They got it to number 16. Last on the list! We bumped this one down in the timeline because of current events, and by the time y'all listen to this, who knows what might have happened, but we do know that this part is accurate based on current reporting. Okay. 10 years ago, Houston Nutt beat the number one team and immediately bolted for Ole Miss, partly because of some drama that was stirred up by people going through his phone records, thanks to public records requests. Decade later, he zapped Hugh Freeze's ass out of that very whole Ole Miss job with this exact same shit.
It's just...
Yeah. Yeah! Yeah, no. Get it in. Get it in there. Rub it in your face. Just get it into the skin. That's what you want. Right at it.
The Wikipedia page is perfect for this, because here's what it says. I'm going to read you a short end of a paragraph, end of a section and start of a new one. On November 23rd, 2007 in Baton Rouge, Nutt's Razorbacks beat the top-ranked football team in the nation. In a game that lasted 3 overtimes, Arkansas defeated eventual national champion the LSU Tigers 50-48, returning the Golden Boot back to Arkansas. 3 days after defeating LSU, Nutt resigned as head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks amid, this is an exact quote from Wikipedia, several controversies and rumors.
Yeah, it was a weird pile of stuff. Like, it started with, a fan was mad about Mitch Mustain and the quarterback who came up with Gus Malzahn, and there was this email and a meeting and phone records, and does he have a relationship with a journalist? And, like, it got weird. And then he just left.
What I really like is that in typical college football programs running their own internet, Houston Nutt still has a profile on Ole Miss's website.
That's phenomenal. He might be the coach now. Like,
wait, we don't know.
He might have found a way to take his job back. It's, Ole Miss, you just got cooed.
That's wonderful. Also,
can I?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, please. Oh, wait, I do have to say one thing. Houston Nutt has an IMDb page, which makes sense because he's been on TV a lot, and most of his credits are as self, including in the film The Blind Side. He does have one film role where he does not play himself. It's in a movie called Greater, which is apparently the story of Brandon Burlesworth, possibly the greatest walk-on in the history of college football. I'm quoting there. I don't endorse that or disclaim it. His role, janitor.
Just cleaning up messes. Just getting stuff up out of here. That's just, all
just
I did.
Just getting the trash out. You know, just helping you get rid of the trash.
Just coming in late at night, spotting something unsightly in your office and giving it the heave-ho.
Disposing. I'm in disposal.
Back disposal. Never been done. Never. 50 years.
Remember, by the way, like where this all adds up, right? That the prior year, the guy that definitely did introduce the Wildcat, because that was totally Danny Nutt, and right, it definitely wasn't Gus Malzahn the year before being innovative, sort of pointing the way for like running a single wing. Because remember, Gus Malzahn is in 2006 the offensive coordinator for like six games until Houston Nutt gets a little upset and somebody else is stealing his thunder and doing innovative, interesting things. And then Gus Malzahn goes to Tulsa. Ever until 2007, there's a lot of talent sitting in Tulsa. It's like Todd Graham, Gus Malzahn. I think you got Herb Hand there.
Yeah, a few others too.
Now, but let's listen. We're not going to get into the Ole Miss thing too much because we're doing our SEC West preview soon, or maybe we'll have already done it. I don't know how time works. It doesn't matter. But let's say this. There is a path forward because, you know, amidst all these controversies, Houston Nutt, despite beating LSU, resigns. And Arkansas has to figure out, like, well, who are we going to turn to? How do we find a moral paragon, a beacon, a true – where is True North? And who do they hire in 2008?
I couldn't tell you. I didn't
No, and no clue. I mean
– whoever they hired, I don't know the name.
Robert,
know, Robert Louisville was having a rough season. That's all I know.
Robert Patrick Petrino.
Yeah, that guy.
I'm sorry. Now, since this is the all Wikipedia, as of this date when we're recording this on July 20th, I'm going to read you just one sentence. This is the first sentence of Bobby Petrino's Wikipedia page. Robert Patrick Petrino, born March 10th, 1961, is an American football coach, former player, and serial adulterer.
You saying that when it comes to relationships, he runs multiple formations?
It's play action, all right?
Fake! It's a double move.
So to go back to the original question... what are we being asked to rate the weirdness of? The fact that Houston Nutt beat LSU and 3 days later resigned?
All of it. This is the one that I really had in mind when we were debating. Are we talking about it then or now?
I would give it like
it was weird as all hell. Now, I don't even know it's weird. It's just beautiful.
At the time, it was like a 9 out of 10. But given what I know now from the perspective in which I'm currently sitting... It's like a 7 out of 10.
I'll bump it to 8, and here's why. It happened relatively quickly. Like, the idea that you could get rid of a coach because of turmoil and controversy and do it in less than a calendar year, that's kind of impressive. Now it's like, boy, this is, we're going to have to drag this motherfucker out. So I'll say it's an 8.
Okay, so... with that, our top 10 would be counting down from number 10. And if we want to reorder any of these, that's fine. Number 10 would be number 2, USF. Number 9 would be Kansas, Missouri. It was very important, sort of wrecked by Oklahoma afterward. Number 8 would be just all the dumb shit. No records made sense. All the numbers were wrong. Just everything was wrong. This is like the grab bag of mayhem spot. Number 7 and 6 tied are the Heisman winner went on to have every job except for longtime NFL starting quarterback at the position he played in college, that and Houston Nutt. Number 5 dinged because it's more mean than dumb would be Dennis Dixon. Number 4, Stanford beating USC as a 40-point underdog. Number 3, LSU winning the title despite losing two of the dumbest games possible in triple overtime. Number 2, App State beating Michigan. in the Big Ten Network's debut. By the way, did we mention it was the Big Ten Network's debut?
And nobody has watched a Big Ten Network game since.
I think every Michigan fan just I'd like to cancel this channel.
I told you we should have never turned away from print.
Please, can we put the rabbit ears back up? When we had those, I didn't have to watch a team from Division IV come in here and beat us like this. They don't even have academics down there in Division IV. We should go down to Division IV. We'd probably do well.
Appalachian's not even a state.
I've looked. And number one, single dumbest event from the dumbest year in the dumbest sport in the entire world was West Virginia losing to, once again, the shittiest fucking team in the fucking world.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, the only one I might switch would be, what do we have right ahead of Stanford? LSU. I might switch that, but I'm not going to quibble over it. That number one is forever the dumbest thing that maybe has ever happened in college football.
It's ever happened in the history of the world.
You know, you could sell me on that.